The following program is produced and paid for by Temple Emmanuel.
I'm proud to be a Jew, but that's way too Jewish for me.
Shalom, and welcome to the Two Jewish Radio Show with Rabbi Sam Kohan and friends, a weekly serving of everything Jewish. We'll have a great hour together of news, music, comedy, and conversation. Our guest this morning is world-renowned pianist Menachem Pressler, founder of the great Beaux Arts Trio. We'll also have visits from our two Jewish expert on the international scene, Tom Price, and our maven on Israel, Guy Gelbert. Please email your comments to us at twojewishradio@yahoo.com or visit us on the web at twojewishradio.com. Two Jewish is sponsored this morning by Temple Emmanuel, a Reformed Jewish community for all of Tucson. Call 327-4501 for information on Arizona's finest synagogue, the only full-service Reformed congregation in southern Arizona. And now, here's Rabbi Sam Kohan and Two Jewish.
Shalom. It's a gorgeous autumn here in the Sonoran Desert in Tucson, Arizona, where I live. And since it's an even-numbered year, that must mean that the roadways are now littered with strange and often hostile signs and placards proclaiming our other season, the past elections. You know, I used to think that elections were kind of sporting events with slightly larger consequences. Lots of sound and fury and cheering and booing, lots of controversy, and then a final game, a vote, in which we decide who won and who lost. This time around, I have to admit that particularly for a midterm election, things seem nastier than usual and weirder. I am personally no fan of negative campaign ads. Why is it that if you can't say something nice about someone, in politics you're supposed to say it really loud with lots of billboards and expensive TV and radio ads? In any case, Election Day has come and gone, bringing a historic midterm victory to the Republican Party and some major changes in the Jewish political world. While the swing to the GOP has elevated one prominent Jewish congressman, it has also unseated several important Jewish legislators and changed the political landscape for us in a variety of ways. And lots of the political figures involved are former guests of Two Jewish, by the way. First, Congressman Eric Cantor of Richmond, Virginia, the only Jewish Republican in the House, is slated to become the majority leader under incoming Speaker John Boehner. This will make the conservative Republican Eric Cantor, a former guest of Two Jewish, the highest-ranking Jewish congressman in history and continue his meteoric political rise. He will certainly be the first majority leader of the American House, that is the Congress, who has a kosher home. As Matt Brooks, the director of the Republican Jewish Coalition, another former guest of Two Jewish, by the way, said, "We are excited for Eric Cantor to become the next House Majority Leader, the highest-ranking Jew to ever serve in the House." Cantor, however, was the exception rather than the rule on that Tuesday. The fortunes of most Jewish politicians in the United States have risen and fallen with the Democrats for decades, and this election continued that trend. The most important Jewish defeat in the election was undoubtedly Senator Russ Feingold, another former Two Jewish guest, who lost the Senate seat he had held since 1993, and who, with fellow Wisconsin Senator Herb Kohl, formed one of the two all-Jewish Senate teams, including Senators Dianne Feinstein and Barbara Boxer from California. Boxer was narrowly reelected last Tuesday. In his concession speech, Russ Feingold quoted another great Jewish Midwesterner, Bob Dylan, saying, "But my heart is not weary, it's light and it's free, I've got nothing but affection for all those who sailed with me." A very classy, principled Jewish senator was defeated, in this case by a billionaire named Ron Johnson. Feingold's sister Dina is a rabbi in Wisconsin. We will miss Russ Feingold. I think the extraordinary fact that both of Wisconsin's senators were Jewish for such a long time, for 18 years, an appropriate number, huh, is amazing given the fact that Wisconsin's Jewish population is just 0.5%. Overall, in the wake of Tuesday's elections, Jewish representation in the Congress dropped from 45 to 40. There will now be 28 Jewish congressmen and women and 12 Jewish senators in the new body, which will be sworn in this coming January. Still, nothing to sneeze at, considering that we form less than 2% of the population, yet represent 12% of the Senate and about 9% of the House. There are some other changes we can expect from these elections on Jewish issues. While most Republicans are very strong supporters of Israel, some of the Tea Party insurgency types, like newly elected Senator-to-be Rand Paul in Kentucky, are quite likely to be far less supportive of Israel than most Republicans have been. In addition, many prominent committee chairs in the House of Representatives have been Jewish, and all were Democrats, who will now be reduced to ranking minority members. With Republicans having taken the House, these lawmakers, all Democrats, lose their chairmanships. Representative Barney Frank of Massachusetts, who heads the Banking Committee, Henry Waxman of California, the chairman of the Commerce and Energy Committee, Howard Berman, also of California, chairman of the Foreign Affairs Committee, and Nida Lowy of New York, the chairwoman of the Foreign Appropriations Subcommittee of the Appropriations Committee. This cannot help but reduce the influence of Jewish voices on some important issues. We'll soon find out just how. Our guest this morning, however, transcends politics. After the heated negativity of the elections, has more mud ever been slung in America at greater expense than we saw in the last few weeks? Music can help soothe the fevered brows and overwrought emotions of Americans. Here is the magnificent Beaux-Arts Trio, led by our guest Menachem Pressler, playing a beautiful piece by Schubert. That was the Beaux-Arts Trio and Menachem Pressler. When we return, we'll meet that legendary pianist, our guest, world-renowned musician Menachem Pressler, founder of the Beaux-Arts Trio, who fled the Nazis in the 1930s and has an extraordinary story to tell. Hear it when we return in a few moments on Too Jewish.
Safety. It's a word we take for granted at home and at the workplace, but sometimes safety isn't a sure thing. Environmental Strategies, Inc. is an environmental remediation company that's been promoting safe living in Arizona since 1989. Environmental Strategies specializes in asbestos and lead abatement, mold remediation, and industrial cleaning. In addition, they have a building and remodeling division that makes it convenient for clients to get all their services from one contractor. Environmental Strategies jobs range from seam tape removal in a single-family home to insulation removal in a Challenger Learjet aircraft and everything in between. So, if you're in need of asbestos or lead removal, mold remediation, industrial cleaning, or top-notch general contracting services, call Environmental Strategies today at 884-1114. Estimates and bids are free and confidential. Ken Goodman is the president, and he'd love to talk with you about your project. Environmental Strategies, serving all of Arizona since 1989. Call 884-1114.
Hi, Joe Spina, Mama's Pizza. Sometimes I think my brother Vinny and I are the luckiest guys in the whole wide world. You see, to us, Mama's is more than just a restaurant. It's a connection to our past. Back in New York, food was the center of our lives. Our family got together for almost any reason to enjoy the great Italian dishes our mom used to make. The scent of slow-cooking marinara. The distinct aroma of garlic simmering in olive oil. Pasta boiling on the stove. These are memories that remind me of family, friends, home. Our goal at Mama's is to serve more than just delicious Italian food. Sure, our pizza and calzones are outstanding. Our cheesecake is to die for. But we strive to serve you more. Call it atmosphere or mood. Or you can just call it love. We hope the next time you come into one of Mama's four locations, it'll become one of your pleasant memories. To Vinny and me, that's the measure of our success. Now repeat after me. Mama's Pizza.
We're delighted to welcome to Two Jewish our guest this morning, the outstanding pianist Menachem Pressler, the founding member, by the way, of the Beaux-Arts Trio. Born in Germany, he and his family fled the Nazis in 1939 and emigrated to Israel. His career was really completely launched when he won the first prize in the Debussy International Piano Competition in San Francisco, one of the world's most prestigious, in 1946. His American debut was with the Philadelphia Orchestra under the baton of the renowned maestro Eugene Ormandy. Pressler has toured extensively throughout the world, performing with orchestras, well, really all of the world's finest orchestras. He's had a long solo career as well as his trio career and really a fantastic classical musical career. We welcome Menachem Pressler. Good morning.
Good morning. It's a pleasure to be with you.
It's a pleasure to have you. You grew up in Germany, really, not just for a brief time, but until you were a teen. Tell us a little bit about that experience, how it shaped your musical identity, and then the experience of fleeing the Nazis.
I don't think that it shaped my musical identity at all, because I just studied with an organist piano while I went to school, and then when I was expelled from school, and even the teacher was not supposed to teach me. He did teach me, though. He was a very fine man. And when we immigrated and we escaped the Nazis, really, by a hair, we left Germany 3 weeks before Germany went into the war. And we went ostensibly on vacation to Italy, supposedly. We left Italy a week before Italy went into the war. The boat, the Galilee, which brought us to Palestine, to Israel, never returned to Italy, was interned. So my musical identity was created in Israel. I had wonderful teachers. The first one was Rudyakov. The second was Leo Kestenberg, a student of Busoni. And I left from Israel to go to the competition. I won the competition. By that time, I had some identity. But I went to study further. I studied with Robert Casadesus, with Egon Petri, and in the end with Steuermann, the pianist of the 12-tone school. So the identity that was created really through my teachers. I would think their influence certainly was part of it. But it was what I felt, because even Debussy, I didn't have any lessons really, besides by a French pianist that came to Israel and I accompanied him for his orchestra concerts. I played with him the rehearsals and he spent some 6 hours with me, a man by the name of Paul Loyonnais. And within those 6 hours, I grasped what was the essence, at least for me. And therefore, I practiced on my own. Now, this is, in any case, that which creates your identity is that inner picture that you create for yourself through your teacher's influences, no question about it. But from what you hear, when you go to a concert, what you hear when you hear a record, when you hear a radio performance, you create some kind of ideal picture, and that is what you do. And so, therefore, the lengthy answer in short term is, it is within you that it's created. And if any country had great influence over it, I would credit Israel with it.
extraordinary introduction to Menachem Pressler. We'll hear much more from him, the great pianist, when we come back a little later this morning on Too Jewish.
If your parents or loved ones are in need of advanced assisted living care, then you should know about Handmakers Tynan Neighborhood. It's the only program of its type in Tucson and is designed for seniors whose needs have exceeded the care available from other assisted living programs. Dorothy Ho is a resident at Handmaker, and she's very pleased with her living arrangements.
My apartment is very comfortable. It's kind of like home now. And everybody here is very pleasant, too.
Dorothy's daughter Gretchen's experience speaks volumes about Handmaker's approach to family and loved ones.
When she first came to Handmaker, I can honestly say that I felt as loved and cared for as my mother has stated recently that she feels she is loved and cared for here.
Handmaker is centrally located on Rosemont, just south of Grant, and includes one and two-bedroom suites, cozy studios with patios and balconies, along with a wonderfully caring staff.
I don't even consider them staff, they're friends.
Phone Handmaker today for your tour and consultation, 322-7035, or visit handmaker.org.
Sunday, November 21st, UA Presents hosts an unforgettable evening of classical music with Menachem Pressler and the New York Chamber Soloist Orchestra with Richard Stoltzman at 7 p.m. at Centennial Hall. The one-night-only performance features the world's foremost clarinetist, two-time Grammy winner Richard Stoltzman, and world-renowned pianist Menachem Pressler, nominated for 6 Grammy Awards. Pressler escaped Nazi Germany and immigrated to Israel, where he learned piano, leading to a career that has spanned nearly 60 years. With the New York Chamber Soloist Orchestra, an outstanding ensemble of distinguished virtuosi, these two famous musicians will present 2 Mozart concertos and a Brahms sonata. Tickets are available at the UA Presents box office at 520-621-3341 or online at uapresents.org. That number again, 621-3341. For Menachem Pressler, Richard Stoltzman, and the New York Chamber Soloists Orchestra.
Adult Jewish learning at Temple Emmanuel is meaningful, challenging, and fun. The Adult Education Academy of Temple Emmanuel welcomes you to our fall semester of classes starting this month. Study Kabbalah or Jewish history, Bible or Hebrew, Jewish music or philosophy, poetry or Talmud or Zohar, spirituality and ethics, all with the best Jewish instruction in Arizona. And don't forget our excellent basic and intermediate Judaism courses, the Jewish Book Group, Jewish Home and Family, Adult Bar and Bat Mitzvah and Confirmation, and the Jewish Movie of the Month. Find out everything you always wanted to know about Judaism just by calling 327-4501. Classes are open to everyone and are taught daytime, evening, and weekends by outstanding rabbis and scholars like Rabbi Sam Kohan, Rabbi Jason Holtz, Rabbi Richard Safran, and other great teachers. Our classes are also available by podcast. Call 327-4501 for a brochure or to sign up. Remember, learning is the primary Jewish act, and Temple Emmanuel has the best way to do it. 18 new courses are starting in October. Sign up now for the Adult Education Academy of Temple Emmanuel fall courses by calling 327-4501 today.
If you have a question, comment, compliment, or criticism, kvetch or kvel, please email us at twojewishradio@yahoo.com, T-O-O, Jewish Radio, or call 520-327-4501, or visit our website at twojewishradio.com. You can also get CDs of past and present shows through the website, or downloading us from there, or at the Apple iTunes Store as popular podcasts. Well, believe it or not, Hanukkah is less than 1 month away. It begins just after Thanksgiving weekend this year, Wednesday, December 1st at sundown, for 8 crazy nights of candles, songs, latkes, and joy. While this seems very early to most people, in fact, Hanukkah can fall anywhere from the end of November to the end of December, depending upon the cycles of the moon, the lunar calendar. It always begins on the 25th day of the Hebrew month of Kislev, of course, marking the historical events of the Maccabees' uprising against their Syrian Greek overlords. But Hanukkah's American calendar date does vary. This year, we start Hanukkah December 1st, and it goes through December 9th. Next year, it'll start December 20th. In 2012, it begins December 8th. But it's in 2013 that it gets really interesting. That year, Hanukkah begins the night before Thanksgiving, November 27th, and concludes by December 5th. That'll really be something. Turkey and latkes. Well, not a bad combination, actually. Anyway, to start our pre-Hanukkah musical preview, here's the Klezmatics playing Woody Guthrie's Hanukkah tune from his rediscovered Hanukkah manuscripts, Hanukkah Dance.
Tippy-tap-toe, happy Hanukkah, round you go. My little latke on your toes, happy Hanukkah.
Very pretty little Hanukkah tune from legendary American folk singer Woody Guthrie, clearly under the influence of his Brooklyn Jewish wife and her mother, a Yiddish poet. That last song, among many others, was packed away in a box for years and reintroduced to the world about 4 years ago. Since we've now started our pre-Hanukkah preparations, I must note there are only 24 more shopping days until Hanukkah starts on the evening of December 1st. Get your candles and your presence, especially for Rabbi Kohan, now. We welcome our maven on Israel, Guy Gelbart, head of the Israel Center. Boker Tov, Guy. Good morning.
Boker Tov, Rabbi. How are you today?
Doing well. Still digesting from the Israeli Epicurean Festival. Wonderful culinary experience. I have to say, when I first went to Israel when I was 15 years old, back in 1976, what I mostly remember was how limited the food was. There was chicken at your midday meal. There wasn't a whole lot of other, like, meat or protein. I was from America. You ate a lot of hummus and pita, and the chocolate was good, and that's about it. Boy, now Israel is this incredible place to eat.
Yes, you're absolutely right. Just this Wednesday, we had a huge Epicurean Israeli ethnic gala that took place at the JCC. We brought 8 women over from Israel. Each brought her own cuisine that was brought from her own background. One was a Kuchanian woman that came to Israel from India. The other was a Moroccan woman that came from Morocco. We had a Bukharian woman. We had an Hungarian woman. We had a lot of kinds of cuisines that each and every one of those women brought from her house and was able to cook for us in large scale to do this amazing event. And I think in this event, we got a glance of the amazing culinary festival, if you might say, that takes place in Israel today, where different diasporas that got into Israel brought their own cuisines. And now in Israel, when you say a melting pot, you really mean a melting pot, a cuisine melting pot.
You know, it's fascinating. I saw a statistic somewhere that there are Jews living in Israel who have come from something like 200 countries around the world. I didn't know that there were 200 countries in the world. And, you know, all of these different foods, I would say they're all delicious. How many of them do Israelis, you know, say someone living in Haifa, how many kinds of Israeli food would people actually try or be likely to go out and eat?
Well, I would say that in general, we could count about 16 different cultural cuisines, main cuisines in Israel. But we also see a lot of merging between cuisines. And nowadays you can go to a dinner at a Polack house and get spicy food, and you'd be surprised, you know. My mom, for example, comes from a Polish background.
From a Polish background, right?
But most of my friends find her food too spicy. So, you know, that thing's happened. And I want to talk about the event we had this Wednesday. It was an amazing event, not only because it brought the taste of Israel here to Tucson, but I think it was a great opportunity from people here in Tucson to meet those women and to see their own private stories, how they got to Israel, why do they love cooking so much, about all their idea of hospitality. And that's a very big idea in Israel. People really appreciate nice and good hospitality. And usually, for instance, you can go to your neighbor without even letting him know you're on your way. Just knock on the door, say, "Hey, I'm here, do you have time?" And a half hour later, they'll already have a huge dinner ready. And you know, and sometimes you say, "Hey, okay, come into the kitchen, help me cut the vegetables," you know. And it's part of the atmosphere. It's not only eating the food, it's like a way of saying we're all friends.
What a wonderful description of Israeli society. And by the way, absolutely delicious. Thanks, Guy. We'll talk next week.
Thank you.
When we come back, we'll hear from our expert on the international Jewish scene, Tom Price, and get the old Jewish joke of the week. We visit weekly with the great restaurateur, Janos Wilder of Janos Restaurant in the J Bar. Good morning, Janos.
Good morning, Rabbi. Please forgive me.
Oh, well, you know, I'm in that business.
I've opened another restaurant.
Downtown?
Downtown Kitchen and Cocktails, 135 South 6. I got to tell you, I am so excited about it. We have created an absolutely gorgeous space where the former Barrio Grill was located. And the food, well, you know my food.
Your food is the best I've ever had. Don't tell my wife, although she agrees. So you're creating magic food, as she calls it, downtown. What's the best way for people to make reservations to try the new place?
Just give us a call at 623-7700 or go online at downtownkitchen.com. We're serving lunch Monday through Saturday, dinner 7 days a week, happy hour, late night Thursday, Friday, and Saturday, and all with prices so low, you can afford to eat here every day.
I would love to. Thanks, Janos.
Thank you, Rabbi.
For 100 years, Evergreen Mortuary and Cemetery has been known for their compassionate commitment to all the families of our community. Known as the most beautiful final resting place in southern Arizona, Evergreen serves all faiths. Their experience conducting Jewish funerals, Reform, Conservative, and Orthodox is second to none. From traditional services to the unique, Evergreen Mortuary and Cemetery offers the best. To speak to a family advisor, call 888-7470, 888-7470.
We welcome our expert on the international Jewish scene, Tom Price. Good morning, Tom.
Good morning, Rabbi.
You recently returned from India, and last week began talking about kind of the overview and the holy city for Hindus, the holiest city for Hindus, Benares, which has a Jewish community and a lot of other interesting aspects to it. Let's go back to that.
Well, Benares, of course, is situated on the Ganges, which is the holy river, and touching the Ganges at any point is considered particularly meritorious. But many Hindus...
Drinking from it may not be a good idea, however.
Many Hindus go to Benares to cremate their loved ones on these famous funeral pyres, which sort of float out into the river and burst into flame and whatever. And they do this on ghats, which are these flat, long platforms that descend gradually into the waters of the river. And a major tourist site, if not to say a tourist trap, is to charter boats, particularly at sunrise or sunset when the light changes and it's very romantic and whatever, and to go float past people who are burning their recently deceased loved ones. And the boats actually go quite close to these burning funeral pyres. And one of the most interesting experiences that I had on this recent trip to India was the different reactions among the Americans in our group to this experience. And basically, all the Jews in the group pretty much unanimously kind of shivered and said, let's get away. Let's back off a little bit. We don't need to be right on top of these burning bodies and breathe in the ashes of human beings. And, you know, I think for some people there were echoes of the Holocaust, and for other people it was just distasteful, and for other people it was, let's give these mourners a little bit of privacy and a little bit of space, which is not a concept dear to the hearts of most Indians. Privacy and space are pretty much non-existent there. But what was interesting was many Americans said, oh, no, let's get closer. This is so cool. And to the point that they wanted to go back and see more the next day. So there was a real divide in the reaction to this major attraction of Benares. And then there was also, there were some kind of very showy priests, Brahmins, Hindu religious functionaries who were like televangelists with loud music and ceremonies on the sides of the Ganges where tens of thousands of people gathered at sunset to do a kind of putting the sun to bed service. And I slept through the morning service. I didn't have the heart to go back, but there was apparently a similar crowd early in the morning, like let's welcome the rising sun kind of service. And one of the many questions that came up was the relationship between Hinduism and Judaism. What are the similarities? What are the differences? What are the parallels? And there are many. And some of them are subtle. Some of them are debatable. Some of them are very interesting and obvious. And I think if you agree, we could have a conversation about that next week.
Yeah, let's talk about it next week. You know, we can talk about the Mariv and the Shachrit that the Brahmins led again. That's a great, great concept. Thanks, Tom. We'll talk next week.
I look forward to it.
And now it's time for the old Jewish joke of the week. Jewish humor, your Bubby and Zadie knew, brought to you by Too Jewish as a Public Service. During tough times, Rivka decided to trim her household budget wherever possible. So instead of having her dress dry clean, she washed it by hand. Proud of her savings, she boasted to her husband Isaac, "Just think, Isaac, we're $5 richer because I washed this dress by hand." "Good," Isaac replied quickly. "Wash it again." That was the old Jewish joke of the week, special feature of Too Jewish just for you. You should live and be well. And now a word of Torah. The urge to journey out into the unknown is a major motivation in the Torah. We saw it with Abraham a few weeks ago. We find it in the lives of most of our ancestors, and we encounter it, perhaps most powerfully, in the story of this week's great Torah portion, Vayetze. At the start of the tale, Jacob leaves his family and his home, both of which happen to be in Beersheba, and journeys towards Sumeria, today's Iraq. He has nothing with him at all, not even a bedroll. He's forced to lay his head on a rock to sleep. In this state of extremist, God brings him a promise in the form of a famous dream, a ladder going up to heaven, angels ascending and descending, and a pledge of family and land, and ultimate safety and security. Jacob, our forefather, wakes from this dream and says, "Hey, God was in this place, and I didn't know it." You know, that's something all of us should be able to say from time to time, isn't it? Somehow, Jacob must first leave everything familiar in order to allow him to sense God's presence. Throughout human history, religions have been founded by individuals who left ordinary lives and places and wandered off into the wilderness, usually the desert. Abraham, Jacob, and Moses are the most obvious Jewish pioneers, but Jesus and Muhammad fit the same pattern. In order to become who we seek to be spiritually, we must begin by leaving what we know already. Of course, when we finally encounter God in the wilderness, we learn that God was back there at home too. We just weren't yet ready to notice that fact. Of all the heroic figures in our people's past, Jacob is the most interesting, I think. He's complex, clever, unreliable, resourceful, and he has a rather spectacularly complicated love life, all of which takes off in this week's Torah portion. But it's that first moment when he realizes how little he really knows that makes him seem most human and most like us today. We too struggle to figure out just where we can find God. If we are lucky and aware, we too come to realize that God is in this place, indeed, in every place, if we only open our eyes and accept that fact. Our guest this morning, Menachem Pressler, is one of the great pianists in the world, founder of the magnificent Beaux-Arts Trio, probably the longest tenured group of its kind in history, and the recipient of numerous Grammy nominations. But his story began as a Jew in Nazi Germany, continued to Palestine before the declaration of the State of Israel. Hear about his extraordinary journey when we come back on Too Jewish.
When you're looking to buy or sell your home, you probably want Tucson's best realtor on your side. That realtor is Jill Rich. As real estate values change, it's comforting to know that Jill Rich knows Tucson's real estate landscape. She follows the trends. She knows the neighborhoods. She even knows how to help you find financing. But most importantly, Jill cares. It doesn't matter if you're looking for a starter home or a castle. It's like having your bubby in the realty business. For sellers, Jill will develop a personal marketing program that'll sell your house fast. There's no one who knows Tucson real estate better. You can reach Jill Rich at Long Realty's River and Campbell office. Call 349-0174. Jill Rich, providing strong representation in a caring way. Call 349-0174. We continue with our Too Jewish update on news of Jews around the world with commentary.
Well, this was a weird week. There was a very strange sequence of events last week in the Jewish world, some of it through the post office. Allow me to explain. Bomb-filled packages were sent from Yemen to two Chicago-area synagogues, one located within the other's facility, in a weird and disturbingly random terror attempt. The bombs, sent from Yemen via UPS, were powerful enough to have brought down the cargo airplane. They were addressed to a synagogue in Chicago, Emmanuel Congregation, which is led by my old friend and mentor, Rabbi Michael Zedek, who was just as startled by the attack as everybody else. As Michael put it, we are an interesting congregation, but not that interesting. Yemeni authorities arrested a 22-year-old female computer engineering student, Hanan al-Samawi, whose telephone number appeared on one of the UPS forms, but they then released her without charges after other students protested her arrest. Further investigation is centered on language schools in Yemen, but so far there have been no further arrests. Rabbi Zedek said that he'd been told that four bombs were sent to synagogues in Chicago. He had the impression that Emmanuel Congregation was not the jihadist-specific target, but actually they meant to bomb Congregation or Chadash, a gay and lesbian-oriented synagogue which shares the building with Emmanuel. Rabbi Larry Edwards of Or Chadash was mystified as to how his synagogue ended up being targeted by Islamic jihadists in Yemen and apparently Egypt. Someone there recently visited Emmanuel Congregation's website 83 times in a single day. We're rather puzzled, Edwards said, at how a little congregation like ours got on the radar as a target for somebody. It's notable, however, that the terrible attack that took place in Mumbai, India 2 years ago, in which Islamic terrorists murdered 173 people, was actually not aimed at the Taj Mahal Palace Hotel or the big hospital that were most involved, but at the little Chabad house nearby, where the rabbi and his wife were murdered. These are strange times, and terrorists use peculiar targets indeed, as long as they are Jewish. But our news can get even weirder. According to a senior Palestinian official, this time a Fatah secularist and not a Hamas Islamist, Israel has intervened in the U.S. midterm elections in order to destroy the peace process. Really? Yasser Abed Rabo, Secretary General of the PLO's Executive Committee, not a small position, said that the American election results prove that Israel played a role in these elections and cooperated with U.S. elements in order to use the results to thwart the negotiations. More than anything, this testifies to the Israeli government's intentions in regards to the peace process. Rabo said that the Republicans taking control of the U.S. House of Representatives would not make a difference to the Palestinians. This is an event with political achievements, but we are working with the American administration, and the elections should not have an effect, said Rabo. President Obama must be overjoyed at that reassurance. And in our continuing news of the weird, actress and bimbo Pamela Sue Anderson Lee, etc., of Baywatch fame, is supposed to meet with the Israeli Knesset Education, Culture, and Sports Committee, which includes ultra-Orthodox members from Shas and United Torah Judaism. She's meeting with them to lobby in favor of banning the fur trade in Israel. It's not clear what influence Ms. Anderson will have over Orthodox Jews who wish to continue to use animal fur on their shtrimals, but more power to her for trying. And Tel Aviv was ranked third on the list of next year's top 10 urban travel destinations by the authors of the Lonely Planet Guides, who called it a modern sin city on the sea, rather than an ancient holy city on a hill, contrasting it with Jerusalem, and added that it's a truly diverse 21st century Mediterranean hub. Well, it is that, but this endorsement is fascinating, since Lonely Planet might be the most anti-Israel, even borderline anti-Semitic, of all the Israel tour books I have ever read. I guess Tel Aviv seduced them in spite of that, and that's without Pamela Anderson. And that's the news of Jews around the world. I want to welcome back to Two Jewish the renowned pianist Menachem Pressler, one of the co-founders of the Bozart Trio. You have recorded some 50 chamber recordings with the Bozart Trio and 30 solo recordings. What do you prefer?
It's the same. I mean, the most, the records that were made with the greatest attention, because those records did reach a great deal of publicity and audiences, and were to be found wherever we played. I mean, we found it all over the world. We found it on a record store in Korea. We found it in Japan. We found it in Brazil. So these records, which were on Philips, it are the ones that became well known and sold in greater measure, but the other records that were made for MGM Records, they were solo records, which of course I made with great love and attention. Many of the works are, as a matter of fact, somebody released without asking me, released all the Mendelssohn recordings that he found on MGM, and he released some other ones. He found the Mendelssohn Concerto, which I did for a concert hall, and he found the Mendelssohn Sextet. That was for MGM, and then, of course, the famous pieces like Variation Sérieuse. And so, therefore, which one do I like best? None. I would say, of course, the ones that were done in maturity, full maturity. Those are some of the Bozart Trio records that won actually all the prizes, the Haydn record, which won the Gramophone Prize, the prize for the first time that chamber music won it. They have for each rubric, they have a prize for the best solo piano, for the best chamber music, for the best opera, for the best choral, and then they take the best of the best, and the Bozart Trio won it with the complete Haydn records.
I have a question, because classical music is so extraordinarily demanding, and really, you know when you play well. Does receiving awards like, you know, being nominated for a Grammy or the England Record of the Year, do those things have much meaning for you?
Of course. They mean that these people like you. And I mean, you're playing to be loved. Naturally, you want to play, have success. You want to earn your status. You want to earn your money. But in the end, what it's all about is love, and you want to be loved. Look, I just returned from China this week. I played there. They did something very special for me. I mean, I taught. I judged a competition in chamber music. And then I played with the orchestra two concerti. And they gave me the appointment. appointed me an honorary professor, which they gave to Minuchin and to Isaac Stern, among others, I guess, and they gave it to me. Now, obviously, I was thrilled, and it meant something that these people so far away, a different culture altogether, would feel that the music that I bring them meant that much. And so, of course, it thrilled me. By the way, on the way home, I played Presler in France in St. Paul, Minnesota, and the mayor declared that day the Menachem Presler Day. Naturally, I was thrilled.
You said earlier today that the country had the greatest influence on your musical development was Israel. You immigrated to Israel at a kind of an early developing time in the country. Tell us a little bit about that experience.
I still go back and forth. I still have an apartment there. Israel is really something I would feel one of the most positive developments in a world torn by strife and among the Jewish people who have really stood before complete annihilation, a rebirth in their own country, a rebirth of their language, a rebirth of their value system. I mean, Israel is a joy, is something very, very special. It has so many problems, and I think we Jewish people always had many problems. There was never a time that there was no one that didn't try to destroy us like now. The men of Iran and the Hezbollah and the Hamas. For them, it is their pleasure to destroy our lives. And, I mean, God has been on our side after this great tragedy, and I think we all Jewish people should be to the side of Israel.
You have received from Germany the Federal Cross of Merit First Class. You've received France's greatest honor.
Even this goes further. The town which I had to run away from, Magdeburg, which is a 1,200-year-old town and has only given honorary citizenship four times since the war, I was given that last November, an honorary citizen of the town.
What did that feel like?
It felt, in a way, because it was given and it was explained. It was explained, as a matter of fact, when they gave the honorary citizenship, on the next morning, they put what they call Stolpersteine. Those are stones that are put in the ground for dead Jewish people. And my uncle and two of my uncles and my aunts had been sent from Magdeburg to Auschwitz and killed there. And so they put that in the ground in presence of the mayor, in the presence of the interior minister. Every province has a government. And with the band. And I will say it was a very moving experience. And, of course, now I have many, many German friends, and I'm very happy and very thrilled to see that Germany is in principle on our side in this battle of that we have in the world with the great anti-Semitism. Not that there are none in Germany. There are. But Germany itself as a nation, Germany as a country, has rallied to our cause. It is interesting only to note that during the time that Saddam Hussein sent missiles, gas missiles to Israel, that we had the gas masks from Germany. Germany that had gassed millions of Jews to death. So it is a kind of retribution. It is at something that in this world we have made someone who is now our friend from that which was our deadly enemy.
I want to shift a little bit back to music. You premiered with the Beaux-Arts Trio at Tanglewood in Massachusetts in 1955. And then in August of 2008, you finally, you guys retired as a group. Obviously, you haven't retired professionally.
No, my guys, we played in Europe. We finished, actually, last August, we played a concert at the Gewandhaus. in Leipzig is one of the storied auditoriums where Schumann and Mendelssohn, Mendelssohn was the conductor of that orchestra, and Schumann and Mendelssohn created a conservatory in Leipzig. It was very, very moving. We played in my Leipzig at the Gewandhaus at their Mendelssohn Fest. We played the two Mendelssohn trios and also two trios by Kurtak, which were written for me. And it was that was the very last concert of the Beaux-Arts trio. It was in 2009.
How did it feel?
Non-sad. I let the trio go because my young violinist, who is wonderful, has a big solo career, and so he could not promise me any more enough dates. I could have taken another violinist, but I didn't want it. It was at its very height. It was really playing so well, the trio, and so I thought, no, that I don't want just to have dates. And then all of a sudden I got millions of dates. And I'm playing all over the world all the time. And but of course, everywhere different repertoire. That's the killing part. And then I have a big class of students at Indiana, a great music school, truly a great music school. And all together, for somebody who's 86, that's pretty good.
Not bad.
Not bad, and God has been good.
Do you think that, you know, so many great classical musicians are Jewish?
There are, many are, and the reason being that was a field where our talents could show. I mean, some people had to, the mother of Stern, for him to be in Moscow to get some lessons, she had to register as a prostitute, so that they could stay in Moscow. I mean, we have studied under the most difficult circumstances. It's true. The greatest talents, a talent like Horowitz, a talent like Heifetz, they were Jewish. Now, I'm proud of it and glad for it. But there are many other great talents. And I would not say that the Jewish talent, it is disproportionate, so it's true that among our people, there are not that many Jewish people. There are so many great talents. But we should be grateful for that, I would think. Explanations are very hard to come by because the Jewish mother has been replaced by the Korean mother. She is now as good to their children as the Jewish mother used to be. So we haven't yet found the real great Korean artists, but we have found many very fine ones.
They're coming, and I always kind of wanted to make Yo-Yo Ma Jewish, but
no, he's Japanese,
of course.
But okay, I was now in China, and I heard some wonderful talents.
Sure,
of course, and if they get the right lessons, they of course will be great. But these unique ones, like the Jews, never had a Beethoven, had a Brahms. Thank God we had a Mendelssohn, although he converted.
Yes.
Not because he wanted to, because his parents thought that was the way of a career.
Yeah, a grandson of Moses Mendelssohn. But
imagine.
Yes.
Imagine.
Yes. I want to thank Menachem Pressler for a wonderful visit here on Too Jewish, one of the real spectacular talents in all of classical music. Thank you so much.
Thanks for your kind words. It was a pleasure.
My pleasure.
Bye-bye.
When we come back, we'll hear about next week's guest get a final musical play out on Too Jewish.
For 100 years, Evergreen Mortuary and Cemetery has been known for their compassionate commitment to all the families of our community. Known as the most beautiful final resting place in southern Arizona, Evergreen serves all faiths. Their experience conducting Jewish funerals, Reform, Conservative, and Orthodox is second to none. From traditional services to the unique, Evergreen Mortuary and Cemetery offers the best. To speak to a family advisor, call 888-7470, 888-7470.
Sunday, November 21st, UA Presents hosts an unforgettable evening of classical music with Menachem Pressler and the New York Chamber Soloist Orchestra with Richard Stoltzman at 7 p.m. at Centennial Hall. The one-night-only performance features the world's foremost clarinetist, two-time Grammy winner Richard Stoltzman, and world-renowned pianist Menachem Pressler, nominated for 6 Grammy Awards. Pressler escaped Nazi Germany and immigrated to Israel, where he learned piano, leading to a career that has spanned span nearly 60 years, with the New York Chamber Soloist Orchestra, an outstanding ensemble of distinguished virtuosi, these two famous musicians will present two Mozart concertos and a Brahms sonata. Tickets are available at the UA Presents box office at 520-621-3341 or online at uapresents.org. That number again, 621-3341. For Menachem Pressler, Richard Stoltzman, and the New York Chamber Soloists Orchestra. Thanks for being here with us this morning on Too Jewish with me, Rabbi Sam Kohan. Next week, our guest will be Arlene Weintraub, author of the expose book Selling the Fountain of Youth, which details how much fraud is involved with our fascination with defeating aging. Our playout this morning comes from our guest, Menachem Pressler, playing with his extraordinary group, the Beaux-Arts Trio, Schubert's Trio, Opus 99, a joyous send-off on this lovely morning. My friends, have a Shavua Tov, a good week and a week, we pray, of peace.
The preceding program was produced and paid for by Temple Emmanuel.